KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
We've got music from every flavor, so keep it tuned on 91.9 on that FM dial where you can turn on, tune in, and jam out.
From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
The Alaska Board of Fisheries kicked off their highly anticipated regulatory meeting in Ketchikan Tuesday, January 28th. The seven-person state board is set to deliberate on nearly 160 proposals over the next 2 weeks, and their votes will determine how the Alaska Department of Fish and Game manages fisheries in southeast Alaska. KRBD's Jack Darrell is courtside and brings us this rundown of the week one proposals before the board.
The Alaska Board of Fisheries meets every 3 years to consider changes to Southeast Alaska fisheries. Fishermen, regulators, biologists, and industry organizations spend months or years preparing for it. Local hotels, too. People from all over Southeast Alaska will be descending on Ketchikan these next 2 weeks. This meeting is divided into two sessions to cover the 160 proposals. First is the groundfish and shellfish issues. That means that day one consisted of board members and the public listening to a series of presentations from area management biologists and state fisheries officials about the state's subsistence program and data and management methods for the region's black cod, crabs, gooey ducks, shrimp, rockfish, all those fisheries. There are 72 of these proposals, and they run the gamut from relatively small tweaks, like how longline fishermen have to fill out their logbooks, to bigger shifts, like allowing residents to take home yellow-eye rockfish again. That fishery has been shuttered for years. And there are also proposals before the board to change when and how sport and commercial fishermen can catch black cod in southeast waters, or tighten and clarify regulations and bycatch requirements on the region's lingcod fisheries. And in that realm, there are six rockfish proposals that generated buzz ahead of the meeting. On the opening day of the meeting, board members spent about 2 hours hearing from local rockfish management biologists. The proposals have to do with reopening fishing for yellow-eye rockfish for residents and all other demersal shelf rockfish species for non-residents. Then we have shellfish. 51 proposals affecting dive fisheries like gooey duck clams and sea cucumbers, changing the season for shrimping, and interestingly, making an entirely new jig fishery for deepwater magister squid. That proposal came from Richard Yamada, a Juneau-based businessman and head of the International Pacific Halibut Commission. Yamada says in the proposal that the fishery could provide another revenue stream for struggling commercial fishermen and tamp down magister squid predation on more economically viable catches like salmon and herring. His proposal was backed by Juneau's Fish and Game Advisory Committee. And then we have crab. Oh boy, are there a lot of crab proposals. There are golden king crab proposals, there are red king crab proposals, most having to do with tweaks to fishing areas, depth of pots, and the timing of fishery openers. Same goes for tanner crabs. But then there are the raft of proposed Dungeness crab policy changes. Some proposals seek to open up whole areas that have been closed to commercial crabbing for dungies in recent years. Like Petersburg fisherman Derek Tinas' proposal alleges that sea otters' enclosures have made the commercial harvest area for the crabs so small that the commercial fishery is close to no longer being economically viable. But then other proposals call for further closures, blaming overfishing. After presentations from biologists, the board will hear public testimony and indigenous traditional knowledge reports. Then it's back to the board to deliberate. The board expects to start voting on some decisions over the weekend, before turning their attention to salmon and herring and finfish next week. The meeting runs through February 9th at the Ted Ferry Civic Center in Ketchikan. At the Board of Fish in Ketchikan, I'm Jack Darrell.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund. In recognition of the fishing industry, which provides more than 50,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
Among the proposals being considered by the Alaska Board of Fisheries at its meeting in Ketchikan is one that would reduce hatchery egg production of pink and chum salmon by 25% in the region. Wrangell's Fish and Game Advisory Committee vehemently opposes the proposal, which has been introduced multiple times in previous years. KSTK's Colette Zarnicki has this story.
Proponents believe hatchery-based salmon compete with and threaten wild salmon stocks in their aquatic environments. One study last year showed that stray hatchery pink salmon could affect wild stocks. But Wrangell Fish and Board Advisory Committee Chair Chris Guggenbickler says there's not a lot of data to support this.
There is a lot of evidence that this would do serious economic harm in our community and other communities around Southeast. So I know for the Gillnet fishery, about 70% of our value is on enhanced fish.
He says many young commercial fishers wouldn't be able to make some of their payments because of the decrease. Guggenbickler is also the board president of the nonprofit Southern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association, known as SARA. It focuses on rehabilitating salmon production in Southern Southeast Alaska. He says even the organization wouldn't be able to pay their bills if the proposal went into effect. He also says reducing chum and pink production would affect the king and chum salmon programs that SARA supports.
If we were cut this production, we'd probably cut our king and coho production, which would affect everybody. We just wouldn't be able to financially support rearing those fish.
Guggenbickler says that this proposal would destroy the efforts they put into creating the Southeastern Alaska Area Salmon Allocation Management Plan. That plan aims to minimize conflicts between user groups, gillnet, seine, and troll fisheries. He says that they've also worked to keep the hatcheries away from significant wild runs, like the Stikine River, to reduce the chances of their fish straying into those areas.
If we cripple the hatchery programs, we're going to be sitting here, in my opinion, in 10 years going, now we ain't got nothing.
The proposal comes from North Pole resident Virgil Umfenauer. He's submitted similar proposals over the years. He's the owner of a fish processing facility in Fairbanks that he started in 1985. He says he's been heavily involved with a variety of significant fisheries management experiences. He's a former member of the Board of Fisheries and was the chairman of the Fish and Game Advisory Committee in Fairbanks. He also helped write Alaska's sustainable salmon policy. He says he's trying to figure out the reasons for declining wild salmon runs across the state, and he thinks salmon in Southeast could affect other areas.
Now it's actually statewide with certain species like Chinook and wild chum salmon and coho salmon, all of them are in the toilet.
For the proposal, Umfenauer says he relied on scientific research that shows how salmon hatcheries harm wild stocks.
To say that there's not proof is, you know, people are accused of or convicted of first-degree murder with less evidence than what we have proving that they're harmful to the wild stocks.
Even though the proposal has been a point of contention for many Southeast Alaska Fish and Board Advisory Committees, including the Juneau Assembly, Umfenauer thinks it might pass this time. He says the entire Fairbanks Fisheries and Advisory Committee supports it. He also says most people in the Arctic, Yukon, and Kuskokwim region do too because they've been negatively impacted. But if it doesn't pass, Umfenauer says he'll reintroduce it to the Board of Fish again. In Wrangell, I'm Colette Zarnicki.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Even though sockeye salmon have been abundant on Cook Inlet's east side in recent years, the state has severely limited the set net fishery there. The restrictions are intended to reduce king salmon mortality amid dwindling runs. Last year, a Kenai fishing couple who were tired of being sidelined launched an experimental fishery that yielded 15,000 sockeye and zero king salmon deaths. As KDLL's Ashlyn O'Hara reports, state fishery authorities will soon consider making the experimental gear a permanent option.
Brian and Lisa Gabriel want to make something clear. There's a difference between beach seines and set beach seines.
Everything is mechanically operated from the beach with no boat. It's utilizing a pulley line system that pulls the net out and pulls it back in, and using the tide and current to billow the seine.
Ordinarily, the Gabriels wouldn't be talking about beach seines. They're just two of more than 400 commercial set net permit holders on Cook Inlet's east side, where they fished for sockeye for decades. But last summer, they tried something new. With a special permit from the head of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in hand, they embarked on a mission.
To try to harvest sockeye and not kill king salmon.
The results of their experiment were positive. The Gabriels caught more than 15,000 salmon over the course of their test fishery. Of those, 13 were king salmon, and all were released alive back into Cook Inlet. Not one king salmon was killed. Now, they're taking their results to Alaska's Board of Fisheries. In March, the board will consider a new regulation for Cook Inlet's east side set net fishery, brought forward by the Gabriels. If approved, set netters could fish with beach seines when their fishery is closed due to poor king runs in the Kenai River.
Well, the best case is that we come out with a regulation in the stock of concern that allows us to use the alternative gear. The worst case would be that we don't come out with anything.
The state ties restrictions on the east side set net fishery to king salmon runs in the Kenai River. When those king runs are poor, the set net fishery is restricted. In recent years, those restrictions have meant limited fishing hours and, in some instances, a complete closure. The Gabriels hope beach seining can provide relief when king runs are especially bad.
You know, is it effective as gill nets? You know, on a fully prosecuted gill net fish? No. Is it better than just dip nets? Yes, we feel that it's going to give us, put us more towards our, what you call, our historical allocation of sockeye, what we're ultimately trying to do.
The mechanics of set beach seining aren't fully polished. For example, the Gabriels say they'd like to develop a way of dumping fish directly from their net into totes, rather than picking them out of the sand. But they think beach seines could provide relief to permit holders if the fishery is restricted again this year.
And we're proud that this could be a change, you know, in our fishery for, you know, the next 10 years or until these kings recover, you know, kind of to keep it alive, to keep the fishermen involved. It's a great family. This way of fishing is pretty amazing.
The Gabriels are hoping to formally present the results of the summer experiment to board members. The Alaska Board of Fisheries will convene in Anchorage during the second week of March. The board is accepting public comments on proposals through February 25th. In Soldotna, I'm Ashlyn O'Hara.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Now, the rest of the story. Marty was a beginning law student who had the world by the tail. His father had spared no expense in preparing Marty for a brilliant legal career. His college professors had admired the young man, and now at 22, he had his master's degree and a beautiful fiancé from a wealthy family. For Marty, the future had never appeared so luminously bright. So his friends thought nothing of it when on July 16 he threw a festive party. None but he had the slightest idea of why that celebration had been held. None in his wildest dreams might have suspected. Marty's friend Justice was last to leave, or would have been, had Marty let him. But when the laughter had died away and the others had gone, Marty took Justice by the arm, sat him down, and began to tell him something wonderful. He, Marty, had been visited from beyond the stars. He, Marty, had had a close encounter. And this, as Justice heard it, was the rest of the story. Getting ready for the upcoming semester had been at once happy and an aggravating adventure. In the first place, the textbooks Marty must have were not available at the university. He'd have to procure them from an off-campus supplier. No big deal. Marty would walk to the store and back. In fact, he was returning from that shopping trip with his brand new law books. The books were bundled under his arms. Dark clouds began gathering. It was not so much that the clouds gathered as how they rushed together. Swiftly, majestically, with apparent purpose, until in no time the sun's light was all but blotted out. Marty remembered the odd chill that came over him as rain began pelting his coat, the otherwise almost dreadful silence that seemed to fall over the world. He looked up, strangely confused, and a moment later it happened. A blinding flash of light enveloped him, the awesome sound like none other he'd ever known, a horrific explosion, and a roaring echo. The earth shook and Marty fell, terrified. This had been his amazing experience. Marty's friend Justice, listening, now smiled. Marty must not be unduly alarmed, Justice said. What had obviously happened was lightning had struck close by, and as long as Marty was unhurt, there was nothing to worry about. A lightning indeed, Marty agreed, but also a sign. A close encounter of the very first kind, a command from heaven itself, to which Marty had instantly responded as he fell to the ground. He vividly recalled saying, "Save me, and I will devote my life to God in a monastery." Justice was astonished, as were all of Marty's friends, when eventually they learned that that very evening the young almost attorney abandoned the good life for what he was sure was an even better one. The celebration had been a farewell party, Marty's grand goodbye to prospective wealth and prestige and all that he had known. Before dawn, he was behind the walls of an Augustinian monastery, and inspired by the white-hot memory of once upon a summertime, Marty did become a monk and more. Oh yes, you know Marty. As a 16th century theologian and Protestant reformer, Martin Luther. The Martin Luther. Only now you know the rest of the story.
This is Statewide News from Alaska Public Media. I'm Ava White. State regulators have fined proponents of the 2024 ranked choice repeal ballot measure nearly $157,000 for what officials called egregious and widespread violations of campaign finance laws. The Alaska Public Offices Commission issued its unanimous final order in the long-running case on Monday. The five commissioners levied unusually large penalties in the case brought against ranked choice opponent Art Mathias and three groups led by Mathias and Phil Izon. The six-figure civil penalty follows earlier fines of roughly $90,000. The case stretches back to July of 2023. That's when ranked choice advocates accused the groups of failing to register with regulators, file accurate reports on time, and disclose the true source of their campaign funds. Commissioners said Izon and Mathias' groups had, quote, proven themselves shockingly poor at complying with their reporting obligations and issued the maximum fine allowed by law. Izon declined to comment. In filings with campaign regulators, the group said they planned to dissolve or already had, which would leave no one to pay the fines. Representatives for the group did not attend a hearing on January 16th, where the commission considered the order. Scott Kendall represents Alaskans for Better Elections, which brought the case to the Campaign Finance Agency, also known as APOC. Kendall says it all adds up to a deliberate attempt to avoid accountability, and he says he's worried the episode could serve as a model for politicians looking for a loophole in state campaign finance laws.
if this behavior is allowed, then future players, future political players have every incentive to form a sham entity, do whatever they want to do, not report, and when they, as soon as they get a complaint against them, they just bankrupt the entity.
The commission said in its order the decision, quote, vindicates the public interest, even if dissolving the groups makes enforcing the fines more difficult. Kendall says he'd like to see APOC levy the fines directly against Izon and Matthias. A state commission is recommending automatic inflation-driven raises and salary cuts for Alaska's governor, lieutenant governor, members of the state legislature, and top officials at state agencies. The Alaska Beacon reports the recommendation will become effective after the 2026 state election unless the Alaska legislature and Governor Mike Dunleavy enact a law disapproving the decision. Alaska's governor currently is paid approximately $176,000 per year in salary. The lieutenant governor's salary is approximately $140,000, and the salaries of state commissioners are approximately $168,000 per year. State legislators receive $84,000 per year in salary. Inflation adjustments would allow gradual, small raises instead of the large bump that occurred 2 years ago. This is Alaska Public Media.
The Alaska Morning News is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Thanks for listening today. We love being a part of your media mix. Tune in every day to catch the best in statewide news and programming. Public media loves being part of your day. Thank you for listening and for your support.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Indeed, designed to be an end-to-end hiring solution for businesses of all sizes to attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one platform. Learn more at Indeed.com/NPR.
Fiber Plus Internet is now available in Sandpoint and King Cove. GCI offers high-speed internet in your community at the same plans and pricing as in Anchorage. More information is available at GCI.com/internet.
This is statewide news from Alaska Public Media. I'm Ava White. President Trump issued an order on his first day to change the name of North America's tallest mountain back to Mount McKinley. So we asked you in a post on our website, which do you prefer, Denali or McKinley? We got 600 responses in 2 days, more than we expected. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin gives us a rundown on what we learned.
The overwhelming favorite, Denali. It wasn't close. About 95% of the respondents to our question said they prefer the name Denali, and they were passionate. Denali fans said it'd be a slap in the face to Alaska Native people to remove an indigenous name and replace it with the name of a president who, as many put it, never set foot in Alaska. Megan McElmail, a graduate student from Wasilla, cited both of those reasons, and she says Denali is the more Alaskan name to non-natives as well.
There are dozens and dozens of local businesses that have Denali in their name. You see a ton of products like Denali Dream Soap, or even at like Moose's Tooth, they have their Denali, you know, sauce they put on their pizzas. And it feels like Alaskans really embraced the name Denali.
That's not just McElmail's impression. Businesses with the name Denali outnumber those named for McKinley 6-1 in the state's business license database. Randy Weiser is a retired Bible school teacher and missionary living in Homer. He says when he was growing up in Kodiak, he used to wonder who McKinley was and what great thing he'd done for Alaska to get his name on that mountain.
And it just puzzled me a little bit because I never heard anything about him. This is long before Google. And I never actually did get any answers to those questions.
Weiser is 73 and says it took him a while to adjust to the name Denali. He says if Trump can so easily change it, he'll just be patient and wait for it to change back. Among those who favor the name McKinley, many told us they grew up with that name and they just think of it as McKinley. A few said it's more patriotic to have a national name. John Rigler responded to our question from his home in Iowa. He thinks Mount McKinley is a better name to promote tourism. From Rigler's perspective, as a bank manager in Des Moines, he thinks more Americans recognize the mountain as McKinley.
And Denali, to a lot of people, sounds like an automobile.
a Chevrolet SUV.
Oh, that's funny, since it was named after the mountain, of course.
Dave Stanley has childhood memories of seeing the mountain as a regal monolith draped in pink pastels. He grew up in Fairbanks in the 50s and 60s after his dad took a job at the Alaska Geophysical Institute.
When I was a kid, I grew up kind of as a campus rat up on the hill above Fairbanks. And so we had a great view of the Alaska Range. And of course, the star of that show was McKinley, as I knew it and I still know it. When I first think of it, I think McKinley.
Stanley says that's just habit, because he's all in for Denali now. A poll by Alaska Survey Research in mid-January found a political correlation with the name preference. Overall, the poll found Alaskans preferred Denali 2-1, but Democrats preferred Denali by an enormous margin, and Republicans were evenly split. For Alaska Public Media, I'm Liz Ruskin.
This is Alaska Public Media.
Think of your fellow man, lend him a helping hand, put a little love in your heart. You see, it's getting late, oh, please don't hesitate, put a little love in your heart, and the world will be a better place.
Good morning, everybody out here in Southwest Alaska, TGIF. Thank goodness it's Friday. Another beautiful day in paradise. No wind to speak of. Just a drizzle of rain, what I would call almost dry rain. You know, dry rain, when it hits your skin or your coat or whatever, your body heat makes it go away before you get wet. That's one of my favorite, dry rain. That's a lot of that in Ketchikan. But be that aside, there's a nice little comment on Martin Luther. I want to say a couple things about him. One thing he mentioned that's really big with the Protestants is justified by faith alone. Well, find me how that is represented in the Bible, because it truly isn't. I mean, I like Luther. He's good enough guy. Yeah, as I think one of my favorite comments is, well, like, you know, I'm not sure he said this, but it's a man who knows not wine, women, and song remains a fool his whole life long. Now, it's attributed to Luther. I don't know if it is or not, but it's one of those things I kind of agree with. And I guess the only thing that I really dislike about Luther, but I can't say it's him. It's the way, the mindset of the way times are. They change. You can't judge history through the mind of a, or the eyes or the mind of a modern man. You can't. I mean, it's just no way. Because he made the comment once, there was a peasant uprising. His comment was, just kill them. They're just peasants. I mean, that's the way they thought back then. I mean, you think about it now, it's like, whoa. Anyway, that was a nice shout-out to Luther. I really appreciated that. One of our great religious thinkers in the past. I'm a Roman Catholic, so it's hard for me to say that. I mean, you Orthodox people probably get the same way. I mean, talk about religion and some of the cornball things that the Church of Rome has done to get us kicked out of the Catholic community in general, that is, the Orthodox, in what, the year 1000? Anyway, interesting stuff. The slightest thing can cause such a disturbance in something as nice and holy and as beautiful as the church. We should all of us get along. Truly, it doesn't matter what religion you are. Like, if you're sincere about it, hey, that's the main thing, right? Anyway, I just wanted to share that with you. I don't want to get into politics or religion, but both of them really appeal to me. And there's something we all should be thinking about, you know. Not fighting about, but, you know, discussing is a good thing. Sharing ideas. I live in the world of ideas. I have an idea right now. Let's start the show. We got Carl Smith with If Teardrops Were Pennies. After that, Leanne Womack with The Fool. And then Margaret Whiting and Jimmy Wakely, that is, with When You and I Were Young Maggie Blues. Here's Carl Smith.
If teardrops were pennies and heartaches were gold, I'd have all the treasures my pockets would hold. I'd be oh so with treasures untold, if teardrops were pennies and heartaches were gold, an acre of diamonds I'd offer to you, a solid gold mansion and airplane or two. This world would be yours to have and to hold, if teardrops were pennies and heartaches were gold. Heartaches you've caused me won't pay for a ring. The love that I've won, it would not have grown cold if teardrops were pennies and heartaches were gold. If teardrops were pennies and heartaches were gold, I'd have all the treasures my pockets would hold. I'd be oh so wealthy with treasures untold, if teardrops were pennies and heartaches were gold.
You don't know me, but I know who you are. Mind if I sit down? Do I look familiar? If I don't, well, I should. I'm sure you've seen me around. I know you've probably heard my name, though we've not been introduced. I'm the fool in love with the fool who's still in love with you. If you've got a minute, I'll buy you a drink. I've got something to say. It might sound crazy, but last night in his sleep, I heard him call out your name. This ain't the first time he's done it before, and it's hard to face the truth. Holding on to the past. Just one more thing before I go. I'm not here to put you down. You don't love him, and that's a fact. Girl, I've seen you around. You hold his heart in the palm of your hand, and it's breaking mine in two. 'Cause I'm the fool in love with the fool who's still in love with you. I'm the fool in love with the fool who's still.
Just one.
were young, Maggie.
When you and I were young, Jimmy.
When you and I were young, Maggie Blue.
Yeah, I should play Maggie May now, but I'm not. We have A Family of 12 by Paul Holmberg. It reminds me of a joke, you know. It's like, it goes like this. If God wanted us to be on the metric system, then Christ would have only had 12 apostles. Good one, huh? So we have A Family of 12, Paul Holmberg. After that, The Judds with Girls Night Out. And then Carlisle's, that's Bill Carlisle, with Tramp on the Street. I was reading that. I almost said Trump on the Street, but I know that's not right. Tramp on the Street. Here we go with Paul Holmberg.
I was raised in a family of 12, and I'm the youngest of them all. We worked, we laughed, and we cried, and together we'd read the Bible and we'd pray. I will never forget my mother, for she would always remind me that God so loved this old world that he gave his only beloved son. Now as I grow older from day to day, I'll thank my mother and my father. Well, they worked, they laughed, and they cried, and together they raised a family of 12. And I'm the youngest of them all. Well, we worked, we laughed, and we cried, and together we'd read the Bible and we'd pray. Yes, we love the Lord Jesus Christ, and we know that he loves us so. But he lived, he died, then he arose, and today he lives within my heart.
Lights down low, I'll still be there. close the door.
Sad fate, he who lay down at the rich man's gate. He begged for the crumbs from the rich man to eat. He was only a tramp found dead on the street. He was some other's darling. He was some other's son. Once he was fair and once he was young. Some mother rocked him, her darling, to sleep. But they left him to die alive, a tramp on the
real famous old country star, and that's Ernest Tubb. I have a couple of his, but he's with one of the famous groups of the 30s and 40s, or at least the 40s. That's the Andrews Sisters. I'm going to do Don't Rob Another Man's Castle, and I'm biting my fingernails and thinking of you. And the third one I'm going to do is just the Andrews Sisters by themselves with Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy of Company B. This will take us to the top of the hour, folks.
Mm-hmm.
man's home is his castle, and he's like a king on a throne. It may be a shack down alongside the track, but everything in it's his own.
So don't think of taking his loved one. It's written, thou shalt not steal. Don't rob another man's castle, no matter how lonesome you feel. Don't rob another man's castle. Don't take his darling away. For as strange as it seems, when you steal a man's dreams, you never know how much you'll pay.
Don't rob a man of his loved one. You'll break his heart, don't you see?
He robbed another man's castle.
Now someone just took her from me. Don't rob a man of his loved one. It's written, thou shalt not steal. Don't rob another man's castle, no matter how lonesome you
confess it's true. I sit around twiddling my thumbs, breaking my heart in two. I'm wondering if you love me so the way you say you do. I'm biting my fingernails and thinking dear of you.
Biting my fingernails, thinking of you. Don't love nobody else, it's funny but it's true.
Just got a feeling maybe we're through.
I'm biting my fingernails and thinking dear of you.
If you think before you speak how happy I would be, you'd never hurt me deep inside. You'd think the world of me.
Instead you say whatever you please, whether or not it's true. I'm biting my fingernails and thinking dear of you.
Biting my fingernails, thinking of you. Don't love nobody else, it's funny but it's true. Just got a feeling, maybe we're through. Biting my fingernails and thinking dear of you.
Ah, come on in, butterfly. Funny, but it's true. Just got a feeling maybe we're through. Biting my fingernails and thinking dear of you.
If you have plans to end it all, I wish you'd tell me now. Don't leave me thinking that someday you'd leave me anyhow.
For I'll forget we ever met and find somebody new.
I'm biting my fingernails and thinking dear of you.
Biting my
fingernails thinking of you.
Don't love nobody else, it's funny but it's true.
Just got a feeling
maybe we're through.
Biting my fingernails and thinking dear of you.
Chicago way. He had a boogie style that no one else could play. He was the top man at his craft. But then his number came up and he was gone with the draft. He's in the army now, a blowing reveille. He's the boogie-woogie bugle boy of Company B. They made him blow a bugle for his Uncle Sam. It really brought him down because he couldn't jam. The captain seemed to understand, because the next day the cap went out and drafted a band. And now the company jumps when he plays reveille. He's the boogie-woogie bugle boy of Company B. A toot, a toot, a toot-de-lad, a toot, he blows it A to the bar. In boogie rhythm, he can't blow a note unless the bass and guitar is playing with him. He makes the company jump when he plays reveille. He's the boogie-woogie bugle boy of Company B. He was a boogie-woogie bugle boy of Company B. Plays boogie boogie bugle, he was busy as a buzz bee. And when he plays, he makes the company jump A to the bar. He's a boogie boogie bugle boy of Company B. Do 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 da da do da da do do. He blows it A to the bar. He can blow a note, hit the bass and guitar as it went on. The company jumps when he plays reveille. He's a boogie boogie bugle boy of Company B.
Every night, and wakes them up the same way in the early bright. They clap their hands and stamp their feet, because they know how he plays when someone gives him a beat. He really breaks it up when he plays reveille. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. He plays reveille. He's the boogie-woogie bugle boy of Company B.